everyone. Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Matt B. Davis. It's a gorgeous March morning. Little iteration there. Ladies and gentlemen, the days just got longer, which is great for those of us who don't like that winter short day business. I don't. For me, so I'm a runner, and if I'm going to go out for my run at 5:30, like at the end of a work day, and then halfway through the run, it's dark already. Just, I'm not a big fan of that. A little weird though. Wife and I started to watch television last night at like 7:30, which is like quiet time for the kids to start going down, right? But it's like super bright outside, so that part's a little weird. Why are we talking about this silly shit? I don't know. We're starting an intro. And I want to tell you about today's episode, but just thought I'd catch you up. It's been a couple weeks since an episode went up. Thought I'd catch up with me. I hope you're all well. Hope you're all avoiding the COVID. Now I sound like a douchebag radio announcer. Hey, guys. Hope everybody's avoiding the COVID. Let's take your calls. Hey, who's got a COVID story they want to share with us? I'll never be that guy, ladies and gentlemen. That is my commitment to you. That is my promise to you. I will never become morning DJ guy, no matter what they pay me. On today's program, Sam Birchfield. I knew nothing about Sam before coming on. I don't even think, I might have listened to one of his songs. I'm not sure. But I interviewed Pip, his wife, Pip the Pansy. She was like, have my hubby on. And I did. And I really enjoyed it. Like, I just went back through and did some editing and listened to the guy. And we had a great chat. He's got a great story. One that he doesn't tell that often, so I'm so glad he told it to me, and I promised him that if he told it to me, he would never have to tell it again because he could just point to this episode. Unfortunately, it's been a few months since he did it, so if he's had to tell it recently or wanted to say, hey, I did it on a podcast, and when that fucking thing's coming out, it's out now, Sam, so you can use it. So we met at Muchacho, one of my favorite outdoor venues to record at, which now that it's warm again, maybe we can start doing that again. Although I'm starting to explore a little bit about the city. Love you, Muchacho. But I'm starting to explore a little bit more, so you may hear some episodes coming from some other spots. If you got a good one that you want to recommend, or like if you want to sponsor the show that way, that's a good thing. I don't know if I've said that recently. If you want to sponsor the show, give us advertising money. We're open. We take it. And if you have a cool studio or a cool restaurant or a cool room and a spot that might be cool, or you know a person that wants some advertising in exchange for rent money, but not rent money, just shout outs on the podcast here, pod reads as we call them. Host reads, we can do that. But Sam was great, and I apologize, Sam. It took so long to get this out, and you're going to enjoy this, and away we go.
Up until a couple days ago, I knew like nothing about you, right?
Yeah, except you interviewed my wife.
Right.
So I was just some guy.
Right. Well, she had said your name, and I was like, I think his name sounds familiar. I don't know, whatever. And then we had talked about, she's like, hey, we should have him on, you should have him on. And then I think either I pushed it once or you pushed it once.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So then I actually like listened to some of your music. I went for a run. I was like, oh, I like this guy. Okay. And then I read the whole American Idol thing, which we'll get to for sure. Yeah. But let's start with, where did you grow up?
Yeah, so I grew up in Seneca, South Carolina.
Okay.
Which most people don't know where it is, but it's right over the border if you're going on 85. So you'll pass it.
Right.
But yeah, it's pretty rural, small-ish town.
Right.
Sort of knew most of the people or families that were there. Yeah, and was playing in a crappy garage bands like from middle school on, and then went to Georgia.
But that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, you know, honestly, it's funny when you look back. I still have recordings from that those days, and they're like the worst thing ever. But I still respected that we were doing it. Like, we made T-shirts, we made CDs.
What was the name of your band?
It was Kelly Sparks the Fuse.
He smiled before he said that.
Yeah, it's like, look around.
Right, you should definitely be embarrassed of whatever high school band name you've come up with.
I don't even know why. I know we looked in a phone book for the Kelly Sparks, and I don't know why, but... yeah, it was a weird
right,
thing.
So this is when phone books existed.
Phone books existed. People use phones. Yeah, man, that was it was funny. It was good times. And then I just started doing... That sort of fell apart because they were older guys and they went up to college and couldn't keep playing. And I started doing more acoustic stuff, which actually was more naturally me. But, you know, when you're in middle school and you have an electric guitar...
You're going to fucking play that
thing.
You're
going to fucking play.
Turn everything up
Van
to 11
Halen.
And fucking go. So yeah, so who were your guys? Like who were you listening to?
Man, like then? So my first concert was a guy named Steve Vai.
Okay, I know Steve Vai is.
He's like a instrumental guitar wizard, basically. Like,
right.
all instrumental music. So my guitar teacher, this guy Matt Odell, was super into like Joe Satriani, Steve Vai, Yngwie Malmsteen.
So you're talking, so people who are younger than...
I'm surprised you're familiar with some of these guys.
I'm 47 years old.
Yeah, but even just their genre-wise, they're like...
Dude, listen, my man.
I don't know you either. You know, I got to get to know you.
Okay. So you're talking 80s guitar gods,
yeah.
Right? Anybody who played guitar had in their room Eddie Van Halen.
He's the obvious one.
Right?
Yeah.
But then, you know, Vi played with Dave Lee Roth and then like Yngwie and then all that shit. Yeah, dude. Like my friends are always in bands. So
yeah,
I kind of know that world.
Well, it's funny, especially if you listen to my music on the run or whatever. Like, that is the opposite of where I've ended up. But my guitar
teacher. Yeah, but nobody should end up as a fucking.
Right.
Nobody's goal is
nobody's
to be like nobody. That shouldn't be anybody's goal, right? That's when you're fucking eighth grade and you want to whack off to
yeah,
fucking.
You're like.
Like that's.
That's
right?
A great like impression of.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah, man, it was. And so my first concert was. I got my dad. I think I was 11, maybe 12. And I convinced my dad with one of his friends and another and his kid or something to go to this like shitty club in Greenville, South Carolina. And like Steve Vai's there with like lasers on his hands, you know, like the most like rock and roll, like ridiculous.
Well, how else do you make watching one guy play the guitar interesting?
You gotta have lasers.
Right?
It's like EDM music. You gotta have lights and lasers to like.
Right.
Yeah. So anyways, that was my first thing. And then somehow, I think my older sister had really cool musical taste. Like she was the one that was pushing like the Shins and like Sufjan Stevens and like.
See, I don't know who that is.
Sufjan Stevens. Exactly, hipster, like folky guy. Or like more like Ray LaMontagne, like the singer songwriter folk guys.
Right.
Damien Rice. So she was super cool and pushing this music on me, and I was like, okay, these guys are cool. And it was easier to sing because my voice is just not like a crazy high rock and roll voice. Yeah. So I wasn't doing that. And so I started doing the acoustic stuff, and it, you know. That carried me into college, I guess.
I mean, I guess the singer-songwriter has always been a thing, but I feel like we definitely go through phases of it, right?
Yes, that is so true.
Right, it's, so like in like the 70s, we had like the fucking...
Joni Mitchell era.
Right.
60s, 70s,
yeah. Cat Stevens, whatever.
Yep.
And then, I don't know, and then it kind of maybe went away for a while?
I think, and like James Taylor, well, yeah, as far as the mainstream thing, it went away. I feel like 80s
right.
was like...
No,
it's
dude.
Not cool to be a singer-songwriter. 90s, no, it was like grungy metal. But then late 90s into the 1000s,
right.
You've got it coming back with like Jack Johnson, John Mayer,
right.
All the Jays, you know, what Jason Mraz,
right?
Right, the Jays.
Even Dave Matthews, even though they're
Matthews.
A band, you got Dave up there doing this.
Yeah.
Dave Matthews
impressions.
Little baby.
Yeah, but it's interesting. And then it's weird to track musical trends like this. Because you start to, it's hard to really get a full scope of what's going on at the macro level of, like, okay, I think it was, like, a singer-songwriter trend, but at the same time, there was, like, super cool, like, R&B being made. It just wasn't as big. And then now we're in, like, the soul Motown throwback whatever phase.
Right.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, the one thing, so I'm, you know, I've definitely become, like, I'm 47 years old, so I've definitely, there are things that I definitely do not like. And I definitely think like, oh, well, my generation certainly had it the best. When I was in high school, you had these amazing bands all coming out with new records every year, year and a half, right? So clearly I grew up in the best era. That's what everybody
clearly,
thinks,
yeah.
Right? And I'm like open enough to know that that's not necessarily true, right? But there are things that I don't quite like get. And so we had the first EDM, right? Except we just called it rave music, right? So, like,
okay.
Like that was the first sort of 1.0.
What would be, like, artists that were 1.0 rave?
I don't know. I just know that I would try to go to the rave after the bar closed, but, like, I wasn't that guy.
Yeah, so you're just like, I just hear, like, a kick drum.
Well, I could appreciate the music, but I'm saying, like, I'm going to try to go and meet girls, and those girls didn't want me. They wanted the rave guy. The
rave guy. Oh,
right?
Man. What does rave guy look like?
Not me.
like it's generic rave guy.
Well, I think they call it emo now, but like just definitely not me. I was definitely more square, right? It's definitely too square. Like, even though I'm not, like, the frat dude, I probably looked closer to that than anything.
Then more towards that than towards rave guy.
Exactly.
Which is good in the scheme of things, probably.
Well, so anyway, so I could appreciate that music, but it was just, you know, it was a lot of that same beat. You know what I mean? And I really honestly couldn't tell one from the other.
Yeah.
But it wasn't what there is now, which is, like, these 20 different kinds of EDM, and then it's like this festival explosion, all this stuff. And I have to say, I honestly don't get that. Like, I don't want to listen to it that long. I don't understand. Like, I understand the concept of you in your room learning a song.
Yeah.
Or you and your friends in the basement jamming.
Yeah.
I don't understand the guy sitting there with electronica things creating sounds. Like, I just don't understand how that even worked. And I had a guy. Do you know HXV is Heroes and Villains?
No.
So he's pretty successful dude, and I had him, and I talked to him. We sat here for like an hour, and I was like, how do you make this music again? Like, what?
Yeah, it's, I mean, because that's...
And they bring in vocalists, and they bring in, you know, rappers and whatever, but it's just, I just don't...
Yeah, you know, it's interesting how technology does that, because I think the electronic stuff, so I was very probably against it, just sort of similar to you, where I'm like, I don't understand this, it doesn't seem like, but my wife's stuff has gone more into that. I mean, she plays with a band too sometimes, but she has started using like a computer and triggering loops and all this stuff. And so that was the first time I saw it and was like, oh, okay. Like, I see how this can be creatively done and all. But there is always with everything, I think, where you go too far. And I think that's the thing that people see that get frustrated is like where EDM, quote unquote, goes too far. It was just like you lose any sense of creative instinct, and you're just making a beat so that people that are on drugs will dance and see the lights. Like there's some shallow form of it, I think, that degrades the whole of it. Because there's people doing really cool things with electronic music, but it's like you see just generic, crappy parts of it, and then you're just like, oh God, this again. But the same with like country music. Like, turn on really crappy country
popular
music,
country.
Pop country, and you're like, oh God, country music just all sucks. But there's some really cool lesser known country stuff happening.
Right.
You know what I mean?
If you can find anybody in all genres with some fucking soul and with some heart, right? Like,
right.
Like, you know it when you hear it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm just trying to, and like, I have a 10-year-old son who's all genres.
Yeah.
Like, 10-year-old son, because of YouTube and because of whatever, like, he hears something, he can just go to his phone or a phone or go to YouTube and just play it over and over again.
Yeah.
So he's into, like, he loves the stuff I listen to, which is a lot of 80s rock,
yeah,
a lot of old school rap, and he likes the newer stuff because that's what comes on and that's what's in fucking Fortnite or whatever.
Yeah, Fortnite. Man, that's got to be crazy having a 10-year-old right now.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about this before with people how, you know, when I grew up, you're probably listening to what your older siblings listen to or your friends listen to, and you're probably in that genre. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, that was me. I mean, it was my sisters. They were just passing me CDs and like,
right,
hey, here's this. And
but that's not how it works anymore because of
internet.
Everything's available any minute you want it. So he can love, you know, the latest frickin' whatever, Avicii, whatever, and then play hip hop and then play, you know, he likes, he found who sings it? Get Down With The Sickness?
Yeah.
Is that Disturbed, maybe?
Ooh,
fucking loves that song, right?
Yeah,
loves that song.
Yeah, it's a great song. You know,
right? But usually, if you were listening to that song,
you'd have a whole
other dressed
scene
that way.
Yes,
exactly.
That's true. So, it's like the single culture that we're in, where it's Spotify streaming, where everything's so accessible.
Right.
There's not really any, like, you don't have to invest like you did necessarily. I mean, not as much in my time. In my time, it was more mix CDs, you know. But like, you don't have to invest in like a whole genre and be like, oh, I'm going to be punk rock kid.
So, exactly.
Like, and I'm not going to fucking listen to your crap. Everyone's just like, no, man, check this one song, because everyone just listens to one song.
Right.
But it's intriguing to me to think about people listening to a song for the first time, like Down With The Sickness, like something that you maybe like grew up hearing or you don't remember the first time you heard it, or like whatever, like a Led Zeppelin tune. And then think about, at some point, every new generation is going to hear those songs for the first time.
Right.
It's kind of cool. Or like watch Star Wars for the first time, whatever, you know. Like,
right.
It's like, whoa, that's why they're timeless, because someone's going to always stumble into the Beatles for the first time.
But that used to be, that's the thing, is that somebody had to turn you on to it, right? older sibling, girlfriend.
It was harder to probably find.
Well, it's just, you just, you, why would you be looking for it? You
right.
know? You just, you, this is just not the world you looked in. But, you know, I try to turn him on to stuff. Like, I'm like, okay, well, I like this, right? Mm-hmm. So he, like, he'll, like, you know, the radio is only the radio. So, like, we'll be in the car and he'll just, like, pick up my phone and, you know, say, hey, Siri, play this song. And, like, some stuff he's totally into right away, and some stuff he's like, that's stupid, Dad. I don't like that.
Yeah.
And he's 10.
Yeah.
So by the time he's 15 or 16 or 18, he'll have a whole nother thing. Right?
I didn't even really have – I really don't think I had my own musical taste till way later in life. Like, it literally was my parent – my dad listened to country and classic rock. My mom listened to, like, the Bee Gees and Michael Jackson. Like, it was all just what people listened to around me until college, maybe after college even. Like, I feel like – 10-year-olds have just having a strong opinion on, I don't know, it's kind of
yeah,
like,
I did not have a strong opinion. Now, he definitely identifies with, like, hip-hop style.
Right.
Like, he definitely wants to look a certain way.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
He likes his hoodies. He likes his baseball caps. He's, like, not going to leave the house kind of without it. And it's kind of adorable.
Yeah.
Because he's not tough.
You know what I mean? He's 10. Well, he's 10.
Right. But he's been doing this since he was, like, 7 or 8.
Oh, man.
But, like, he definitely, like, that's the style he identifies with. But in terms of music, he'll listen to, like, whatever.
Yeah. Man, that culture type stuff and how it cycles through is always interesting to me. Like, these weird periods we find ourselves in, and, like, they sort of blend as they change from generation to generation and over time. You know, like, again, the soul Motown thing as an example. Like, there's all these horns are a lot more prevalent right now. There's, like, these... like horn funky jam bands are more out there in the college world, and like, and that's obviously throwing back to an era like 70s. But then you like a younger generation, like your kid doing this hip hop thing that's going on simultaneously as
right.
You know what I mean? It's all happening at once, but it's like these different phases that are, it's weird.
Right. It's like, you know, when people say that like grunge killed like the hair metal, like I'm sure there were tours going on for another 5 years.
Oh, for
that,
sure.
And the money was being made.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But it's easier to sort of like
just bunch it into this one
and say that
era.
Although I have gotten friendly with drummer from oh God. So you have older, you have kids, your fucking brain is just gone.
I don't have room for this anymore.
Anyway, he said, looking back, it did feel like overnight, but it wasn't. You know what I mean?
Right.
But like, they were Slaughter's the name of the band. Do you even know them?
I know them from seeing like T-shirts.
Right. So they had
Slaughter. Like, that's a fucking cool band.
Right. So they had like the kind of your typical MTV hits.
Yeah.
Right. And they weren't as big as fucking Crew, but you know what I mean? But they were, you know, and yeah, like. It went away.
It's gone.
So for you, every kid, and especially, you know, guy in college is like, well, I'm going to play the guitar. When did it start being like, this might actually like, this is what I really, really, really want to do.
Yeah. You know, I think I had that thought in high school, honestly. Like I definitely was one of those kids that was like, I mean, I grew up in like a middle-class family that was like, you should probably go to school, you know. But I knew in high school, as I was, I think it was probably sophomore year of high school, I made a solo CD. So I had done the band thing in middle school, and at this point I was like, solo career, right? It sounds ridiculous. But I did that, and I was like, man, I really love, the thing I fell in love with was like crafting songs. Like, I am obsessed. At first I was obsessed with guitar, just playing fat, just, you know, whacking off on guitar, like, and then I was like, man, writing songs, it's like creation, you know? And I don't know if that's because I was into Legos until, it was like my entire life until like 11 was Legos, then guitar. Like, I just did these one-track things.
You were ahead of the Legos curve, I think.
Ahead of the Legos curve?
Well, yeah, because Legos is like, Legos were just a thing. And then in the last 10 years, it's
become
like...
Oh, they got
like
the Lego movie and
right,
stuff.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
You know what's funny is my friend and I, who would always play Legos together, we literally were like, at the time, we wanted to be professional Lego builders, obviously. And, we had all these. We're like, we could so come up with better Legos, and we're like, they need to make Lord of the Rings Legos. They need, and like stuff they started doing like 10 years later. We're like, damn it! Like,
so I said, you're ahead of the Lego.
We should have made money off of that. Anyways, so I was doing the solo career thing, and so in high school, I knew that I wanted to do music. I just didn't know what the heck that looked like. I had no, you know, there's no education of like becoming an artist, like a musical artist,
right?
Like a band or something. It's like, oh, go to music school and be a teacher, or go to art school and be a painter, or be a... Most of the time, it's a teacher, honestly. So I went to Georgia because of the music It's just an awesome music town. There's nothing really in South Carolina that compares to that kind of like culture. And I got hooked up with some guys and had another band that was something different. And then my junior year was when I, even though I knew I wanted to do music, that's when it really hit me, I think, because I was like, oh, I graduate soon. I don't have any internships or jobs or anything else. And I've just been playing shows this whole time. Like, that's the thing I'm going to do. You know, it sort of hit me like, I got to start being more serious about this.
Right.
And, so I actually entered a singing competition called Campus Superstar, which sounds pretty funny. And I ended up winning that, and that's how I paid for my first EP.
What year is this?
This would have been 2013, I think. Yeah.
Campus Superstar, so some American Idol ripoff type situation?
Well, it was just like the Georgia... Actually, it was like the Hillel, like the Jewish foundation, whatever... group at Georgia that was doing like a fundraiser, and they had donors were like, hey, the winner will get $5,000. I was like that's crazy, $5,000. And
were you in the Jewish fraternity?
No, I wasn't. They were just like, and they wanted anyone to be involved, so I mean, they wanted to be like inclusive of anybody, so they were just, somebody sent out an email, I think it was the I was in the there was
so
like,
it's like Birchfield, he must be Jewish, let's get him.
No, you didn't have to be Jewish. Birchfeld. No.
It is Birchfeld?
No, it's not. Oh. No. Yeah, so I think, I don't know, I did that and then was like, okay, I've got some money. It was sort of serendipitous. Like, all right, now I've got $5,000 and I'm going to put all of that into making a record.
That's what you should do.
Yeah. And I did, basically, that next year.
Right?
Yeah. And then I graduated.
So then what? Did you think you were going to work?
Well, like, work like...
Or you just think I'm just going to be a starving artist or... Until I make it big?
Yeah, so I started putting all, like, everything into this basket of, like, music, like, original music. And, but through that, I met some other guys, some other players, and I actually started doing, like, weddings to pay the bills with some guys in Atlanta who are really good friends now. We play together. Anyway, so they sort of gave me something where I could have steady income. Not really steady, but income. So I started doing weddings. And I was like, all right, I'm going to put this record out and just start. I really didn't know what I was doing. I was like, I'm going to play house shows. I'll just play anywhere I can play. I had some friends that were sort of like helping out with booking just for fun. Because they're like, I don't know, I'm just graduated college. Let me just try to do
this. Is this George Harrison? I think it's somebody playing George Harrison.
Oh, a cover?
But I just don't know that I've ever heard the song covered. I just think it's interesting. Hang on.
Here, listen.
Not so much of a man. I'm like a fish on the... So it's definitely George Harrison, but I don't know that it is George Harrison. It sort of sounds like maybe another version. Are you a George Harrison guy at all?
Not huge George Harrison. More Paul McCartney.
Right.
But...
I guess you more to be a John guy, actually, because usually it's just, you know, Paul or John, and like, you know, you get... I guess you'd be more of a John guy. I'm a Paul guy all the way.
Really? I'm actually more of a Paul guy than a John guy.
Yeah?
I sort of got annoyed at his, like, persona... Of like, you know, it's almost like so, like, hey, I'm going to be so weird and so, like, artsy. Right. Whereas Paul McCartney was like, I'm just going to write really good songs and, like, be awesome at all the instruments. And you know what I mean? It's just like.
But here's the thing. We lost John so young. Like, he might have, come out of that phase of being so fucking angry.
Yeah. Yeah, but even early on, though, I mean, like, Paul's first records, solo records, were, like, I liked more, you know.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't know. It's weird to think about if he was still alive.
I'm going to have to ask him later to go check his playlist. Because it's just a random... It's just like, do you know this song?
No, it's not...
It's a random song to even be doing. It's not a popular...
Right. Very indie.
Right?
To cover it, yeah. You're in the mode, man. You're in the song right now. The danger of podcasting outside.
Right. Well, it's just like I said, just like it's so random. All right, where were we?
I don't know. I was talking about... Starting to play shows.
These girls were struggling with that fan being too strong.
Mm, powerful.
So now you can hear it.
Even more.
It could be like, but it's not him. I was going to say it's him maybe live, but sorry, we're like boring the listener.
No, I don't care.
So you're making money doing the wedding stuff. What was your first, what was this like, this money, the CD that you put money into? What was that called?
It's still out there. It's called Where to Run.
Right. Is it on the Spotify?
It's on the Spotify.
Right.
So the big song of that, Here Tonight, it just sort of got... It caught on at some point, started getting on like playlists and stuff and sort of helped propel what I was doing, I guess, which is funny because...
Like on like Spotify playlists?
Mm-hmm, yeah. And so it was weird. It was several years after I put it out. It just started like, oh, this song's like sort of, I mean, blowing up, and at least for me, like it was starting to
get... Do you make like a half a cent for every like download? Like I don't even know how that works.
I actually do pretty well on Spotify.
Yeah?
Yeah. Actually, it's probably the most steady good money I make.
That's great. Just,
yeah. I mean, it's, I think it takes a lot to get to that point. So I understand people's frustration. When you see the numbers, I understand people get frustrated. You're like what, 20,000 people listen to this? But it's like, well, the way they work is like that out of the giant pool of how many people listen.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, well, it's not as many, you know. Started to get
I was told it was horrible money. So if it's great, if it's giving you
well,
some...
it's how you look at it. I mean, like, you can't look at it like you would a radio play or a sale.
Right.
Which is the whole debate of streaming is like it's a different thing. Like, oh, it's not quite a sale. It's not quite a radio play. And so I think with Spotify, I don't know, it might change. But as of now, what I have roughly seen is if you have 100,000 monthly listeners, which is a lot, but that's just like an average to sort of look at. If it's around there, you make around $1,000 a month based on what I've seen.
That's not bad.
It's not bad. Yeah. So
for
that's,
work you already did.
Exactly. It's while you're sleeping. So right. The way I see it is like, cool. This
that's the game. Residual income. That's where it's at.
Yeah. So it's like, but it's tricky because again, it's, I don't know, like Spotify, the way I think about it is like, what if Spotify was just like, ah, screw you guys, we're going to change this, or... It's like they sort of hold a lot of power in a way right now. And I think they're doing it. They're being very ethical and they're really putting artists first right now. But what if like 10 years from now, you know, whatever, new CEO and they're just like, oh yeah, we're just going to like take more money. And it would be really hard, I think, to sort of fight it because it's such
extreme. Well, that's the thing is that it's still certainly better than when the man held the keys 20 years ago and no one was even going to fucking hear you.
Yeah. Well, it's different. It's definitely different because, yeah, with like a label, like the big labels back in the day, it was like a smaller amount of people had a ton of sales and success, and there wasn't really as much room for like the middle class band, as I would call it, and then there was just a bunch of really poor bands on the road, you know what I mean? And now I think it's like there's probably more quote-unquote middle class bands or artists where it's like, oh, I can actually like... You know, between my Spotify stuff and selling stuff on the road, like,
right.
I can support myself.
Right, if you got some merch crazy. Going on, right?
It's like, oh, I can do this. And there's still the crazy, successful, mega wealthy artists.
Right.
But I think there's more room, probably, because Spotify opens up the gates of, like you're saying, your kid can just be like, discover something. I mean, it's like total, it could be random, but some person in Japan could just find my song and be like, oh, I love this song, and save it and listen to it. The other thing about it is, if you buy a record and you're obsessed with it and you're just like, I'm going to listen to this Beastie Boys record a million times, no one ever knows. They just count the sale of the record. So like, yes, somebody bought a Beastie Boys record. But if you listen to it a million times in Spotify world, that keeps counting. So it's like keeps track of actually what people listen to versus what people are buying. Because you could go buy the latest big album that came out, like some crazy pop whatever. Celine Dion put out a record. You're like, oh my God, I'm going to go. I'm a big Celine Dion fan. I know you are. And then you buy it, and you're like, oh, I only like this one song. Whereas with Spotify, you like the one song? That one song is going to be pushed because more people will listen to it. So
if I wanted to help you out, I could just go home and put you on repeat, and that would help you?
Well, so this is the thing. I don't know how any of this stuff works, but my wife was saying... One of her friends that works in like social media stuff said that Spotify will punish accounts that do that because people are starting to like literally like have computers set up to, like in a room just playing artists to like fake create.
Of course they do.
Of course, you find some way to just like
of course
fuck up the system. So I think they actually punish accounts that do that repeatedly just like play something on loop, which is interesting. But in theory, yes, you could.
Well, and it's also, I know that's a thing that people will do. I've heard people say that they work, like if they're going to work with a song in the background, they'll put it on repeat. That's like a thing that people do. I don't do that.
Yeah.
That doesn't really work for me. But people, have you not heard of this?
What, one song?
Yeah, like Tim Ferriss talked about it, and so I think that got a lot of people doing it.
Oh, interesting.
Like when he's, you know, working or whatever, he'll put a song. Like I get maybe an album on repeat, I can kind of get,
yeah,
but not a song.
Unless it's something ambient, like a weird 8-minute, like.
But like he'll have certain movies on that he'll just play over and over again in the background. I don't know. It's weird. It's not certainly not how I would ever operate.
Yeah, that's.
I'm just fascinated by all of it, dude. Just because I am someone that, you know, so I grew up in this sort of like last era of rock and roll bands, really.
Yeah.
And I'm grew up in the 80s, okay? So at the time, when I'm hearing The Who and The Beatles and The Stones and Led Zeppelin and Queen, like all these amazing bands, it's like they've been there forever, but the truth is they'd only been around for about 20 years.
Yeah.
Right? But in the time, it's like, oh my God, this is the oldies, right?
Yeah.
But I was only like second or third generation removed from it.
Yeah.
Right? So like my older sisters had all the Led Zeppelin albums, legit.
Vinyl. Went to shows. Yeah.
The cool like spinny thing on Physical Graffiti or whatever it was. Like you have those albums, you're looking at them, you're fascinated by them, whatever. And then the time that I grew up in, this amazing time of the 80s, which, you know, for me, like REM came out with a record, like I said, like every 18 months. And they were the greatest things in the world, especially because they were ours, right? Because we're from here.
Did you grow up here as well?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So, but also, I'm trying to think what else, like I bought, like whatever was huge that like, you know, Van Halen put out a record every couple years. Yeah. It was just a great time. And we just don't have those things anymore because we are singles driven. I know I'm late to the party, but like I recently got into the Killers in a big way, and I know they had a minute years ago. Yeah. But they're like, what's a big band? What's a band we've had since then? Like, what's a fucking band? Not an artist, but like an actual band that you were like, what a fucking killer rock band.
Yeah, it's a different world, man. I hope people try to reclaim. I think something as an artist, like, there's a responsibility to direct the artist at large into a more truthful place. That sounds very like super meta and whatever, but like I think we as an artist community have the responsibility to get things back in line, because I think the idea of singles aren't a bad thing.
No, I don't think so either,
but I do think singles with the only goal of just like making money and just hitting trends is bad. And I think the nice thing about albums is that it forces people to take their time and hopefully make something that is more of a creative statement.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that, you know, I know that singles are what we had first, right? In the 50s, that's what we had. Then the album came along, and I'm not even talking about a concept album. I'm just talking about the idea of here's the first five, side one, here's the first five, side two. Then, again, I keep going back to REM. Like, I've been listening to them a lot recently. That's why I'm talking about them. But, like, I don't really like to hear a Spotify mix-up. I want to hear those songs by the other songs because it tells me, you know, this time this band was making this kinds of music. That means a lot to me because I remember the feelings I had. You know what I mean?
And there's a reason that people put things in an order too.
Right.
Like even if it isn't a concept album and everything doesn't flow into each other like a Pink Floyd record, like if it's still, which great. But we were listening to, my wife hadn't really listened to much Pink Floyd, and I was like, oh, I used to listen to this like The Wall, like on the way to school with my sister, and we put it on and she was like, it just gets sort of weird, you know?
Right.
She was like, she's just really straightforward. Like, yeah, I don't know if I like all this. Like, I was like, no, wait till Comfortably Numb, or like, wait till like, anyways, yeah, I think records and having an order and having obviously the physical medium of a record is, I just think it's important, and people are coming full circle to realize that, but we're such in an internet age that it's hard to, you can't go back in time.
I'm not saying we should all own vinyl. I'm just saying that I like the idea of here's first fucking song, the first track you hear,
right?
Like when you put this thing on, and that forever is like, that's how that fucking album kicks off, and it's for a fucking reason, and it like sometimes it blows your mind.
Yeah.
And then comes like, you know, the middle of side two is the song they never released but becomes everybody's favorite, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like all that shit.
Well, yeah, I mean, whether it's record, vinyl, or CD, or just the format, I do agree that, yeah, having an album is, there's something to it, and I think, but I do think, I don't know, from being...
I'm trying to get out of the sun. I think it's following
me. Oh, no, it's
me.
Just following you, man.
I'm going to move over here.
I think from being on, quote-unquote, the inside, just being an artist and seeing other artists and, like, being in the music world, I think people are definitely getting back to album mentality. There's just, like, people are definitely getting back to just, like, let's get in a room and record at one time. And, you know, it's like this, like the glory days. You know, like, people are wanting to go do this throwback thing and, like, be in a room, make physical things that are not just all digital.
Right.
And so I think, I don't know. I don't know what it's going to look like with technology we have for playing it all, but hopefully there's a resurgent in albums and bands making records.
All right. So let's talk about American Idol stuff. If you're not sick, if you're not sick of talking about it.
I hate talking about
it. I'm sure you do, but I can't have you on and not talk about it at least a little bit.
You know what I hope? I hope someday I do something that will finally overshadow that one little moment of my life. Because it's like, come on, like, people, it's like, you can't escape the clutches of it.
Well, listen, because of what you did, which we'll get to, I think it's a great story. Nobody has that story, as far as I know. People have the, I finished eighth, and this is what my life turned out like afterwards, but nobody so far that I know of has your story.
Yeah, it's a complicated story, though. It's more complicated than the press.
All right, so let me tell you what I know, and then you can fill in the details, and then you can never talk about it again. Then if anybody asks you, you can go, you know what? I'm on the Atlanta podcast.
Listen to this one. Yeah.
Episode 102. I'm not kidding.
All right, you're right.
Because like I saw that like Tarantino was on an interview the other day, and somebody was asking about violence or racism or whatever, and he goes, listen, I've got years of YouTube shit. Go fucking find it. I'm not answering that question for you, asshole. So I'll be the last guy that ever asks you. What I know is this. Sam Birchfield grew up in South Carolina. Then he got on the show. Then he got the ticket to Hollywood. And then he said, you know what? This contract's bullshit. I don't want you to fucking own my ass the rest of my life. Fuck you. I'm not going to Hollywood. And he went on with the rest of his life.
Verbatim.
Okay?
Yeah. It's tricky because I don't really know what legally I can and can't say.
Oh, Jesus Christ. They're not coming after you.
So this is the thing.
They're not coming after you.
It's not just them. It's the Russians.
If you did sign it, then yes, anything you tried to do, they would try to get a piece of, including this podcast. But since you didn't...
I signed it, and then I turned it down.
19... What's it called? 19... What's it called? What's the name of the company? Signed in 19...
19 Entertainment?
Yeah. They're not coming after you, dude.
Yeah.
None of the Simons. Simon Cowell, Simon the other guy.
Is there another Simon?
There's a lot of Simons. There's multiple Simons. Oh, the guy that owns 19 whatever.
Oh.
So wait a minute, you physically did sign it?
I signed it and mailed it in, and then I called them and was like, I don't want to do this anymore. Can I still get out of this? And they're like,
we built your backstory.
They really think you should do it, blah, blah, blah. All the way up to the day before the flight to L.A., and they were like, made it all dramatic. They're like, hey, there's a seat for you on the plane. Like, if you show up, if you show up to the airport tomorrow, like you can still come and blah, blah, blah. The only reason they think they were invested in me in that way is because they had already filmed stuff about me. Like, they made a story that they thought was worth doing, and which was just a bunch of bullshit.
Of course, because that's what reality TV is.
Made up, yeah. There was things where, like, you have to allow people in your life to be replaced by actors if they choose. They're gonna come after me, man. I'm telling all their secrets. No, but
most of it's been spoiled already.
Yeah.
So let's say, for example, you have a girlfriend, then you break up with that girlfriend, but she's bad for the story if we get rid of her.
Like,
so we're gonna bring in an actress. Yeah. Pretend to like her.
Pretend to like her. Or like
what
your
year
mom.
Is this, by the way?
So and then I mentioned a little bit about that singing competition was 2013.
Right.
The beginning of 2013, like January, February. So then I was like, all right, I'm going to start making this record. And then that summer, I worked at this camp in North Carolina every summer. And for some reason, people that worked there and, like, my aunt and my girlfriend's parents at the time, like, all these people separately were like, hey, American Idol's coming through Atlanta. You should audition. Like, why not? And at the time, I was young and naive, and I was like, what I got to lose? I'll just go do it for fun and whatever. So I came to Atlanta, and that summer... 2013, and I was like, while I was working at the camp, so I like drove down from North Carolina, and I did this crazy day, you know, people freaking out outside of whatever, somewhere up in like...
How long did you wait in line?
It was a long time outside, because they want to film stuff outside. They want to film, like, people are waiting in line outside to get in, but they're like, they want to film stuff, so they're like, hey, everybody, say something together, like, whatever, and then, or they'd be like, people would be jamming... And they'd be like, oh, let's go film these people. Or they came up to me and this girl I met, and they were just like, hey, can we film you guys? Like, there was no reason. Like, we had just met, and they were like, oh, yeah, let's film you guys together. Like, you're, like, hanging out. It was this weird thing. You know, like, they're so shallow. They're obviously just, like, picking who looks interesting or ridiculous or whatever. But, yeah, I did the audition, and it actually takes – there's like three or four rounds that look like one round. So like I did that day and got through it. Then they're like, come back again in like a month. And then I came back again. Then there was another one.
What did, I want to know what you sang the first time.
On the first time, I think I sang No Diggity or Say My Name, Destiny's Child.
Just acoustically.
I might have done two.
Just all gay and acoustic, though.
Yeah, well, I had an acoustic guitar.
Right.
So it wasn't just a cappella. Yeah, it's all acoustic. And then I did Jungle Book and one of those. I did the Jungle Book song, I Want to Be Like You. And then fast forward, and I did the actual one in front of the judges because it's not in front of them at first. And they're like, all right, you got the golden ticket. And I was like, woo. And then.
And who are the judges this season?
Jennifer Lopez, Keith Urban, and Harry Connick Jr.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were you a fan of any of them?
No. I mean, it was cool. The coolest thing was like that it wasn't like that they were just people. You know what I mean? You see the crazy. It's like, oh, they're just people sitting over there. Like normal people with lots of makeup on. Like, okay. Yeah. So it's sort of like a reality check, I guess. But anyways, in between all those auditions that were stretched out, I was working on my record. And then so that day when I got the quote unquote golden ticket, that's when they sit this like massive contract on the table, do all this stuff, background checks, personality surveys, etc. And because in between those auditions, they had sent people to my college apartment to film stuff. So they were building some sort of story. It was like, and they sent me with like a little Zoom recorder to record whatever I was doing, and like just.
Did you get to keep it?
No.
When we can fucking say anything we want, then you fucking let you keep the fucking Zoom
yeah,
camera.
Fucking. No, but so then this is where it gets kind of crazy, and I don't know again legally what, but I'll just say so that everyone can listen to this podcast and know
and
what happened.
And you never talk about it again.
So I went to my music business professor, and he hooked me up with a lawyer because they only gave you like a week to go through this entire contract and send it back. Like you right. have to send it back in a week.
I'm going
to
stop right there and just say that the culture that we live in, most people, they're not anybody fucking look at it. They're so happy to even think that maybe they can be on television for 5 fucking minutes that they like would sign it with their fucking penis. They'd sign it with their blood, right?
Bloody penis.
Seriously.
Yeah.
But that's why the story is interesting. Not just that you're on a stupid, almost on a stupid show.
I feel like I've always had sort of, I like to think things pretty deeply through. And I was in the music business program, so I had, you know, been studying contracts in my classes of like things to look out for. So I was like, I'm going to at least look this over. And so I looked at over with this lawyer and who volunteered her time, very kind. And she was like, yeah, this is like the worst as far as like a record deal. Yeah, it's the worst. You would, you know, it's all bad. You get not very good deals on anything. They have the right to like creatively tell you what to do, all this stuff. And there was also a thing in there about I couldn't release any music. That was the most significant thing of all this because I was finishing up my first record that I've been putting these $5,000 from this competition into. It was pretty much gone. And they wouldn't let me release it until a year after the show was over. So the show didn't even air until like February. This was in the fall. So it would have been like a year and a half or two after that moment when I was finishing up this record. I was like, that sucks. So, you know, in that next week, maybe, I got this phone call from this guy in L.A. who is very famous. And he's like, I'm putting together a super band, and we found yourself on YouTube, and can we fly you to L.A. to look at, to, like, audition and just see if it's a good fit? Like, no promises. And I was like, I did sign this contract with this Idol thing. Like, I don't know. Like, that's later in the year, but, like, does that affect this at all? They're like, nah, don't worry about that. Just come out here. And so I flew to L.A., went to this crazy studio.
Was it Tom Petty?
No.
Was it the ghost of Tom Petty?
It was the ghost of Tom Petty. He was still alive. And so I found out I knew one of the guys that was involved. They wanted three guys to be this, like, folk boy band, essentially. Wouldn't call it that, but it was folk pop music.
Which one would you be? Would you be the interesting one, the cute one, the smart one?
I probably wouldn't have been the main
one?
Guy.
The hip, you know what I mean? Like you have the hat.
Oh, yeah,
side.
I have a sideways hat. Right.
You wear spray painted shirts.
I don't know. Anyway, so the three of us, and they basically, when I came home after that
just crazy. Like, they wined and dined us and all this. Like, I was like, what the heck just happened? And then they were like, hey, you know, we want you to be a part of this thing. Obviously, you can't do the idol thing if you do this. And I was like, well, here's my beef with the idol thing is they won't let me put my record out. Because they were basically like, you have to decide. And I was like, well, I'm not going to say yes or no. And they're like, well, we need an answer.
Right.
I was like, well, these two things are basically the same opportunity of, like, selling your soul.
Right. Which one do I want to do?
Which one do I want to do? And I hadn't agreed to the... There was no contract for the band thing yet. They hadn't sent us one.
The Ghost of Tom Petty had not sent you.
They had not sent us one. And so I was like, okay, well, if I do this, can you guarantee that I can release my record that I'm making right now? And they were like, well, I don't know. They're like, no, like, this is the thing. Like, this is the deciding thing for me because the other opportunity in the contract that I already sent in, like, I can't do that. And that's my biggest beef. That's why I'm sort of, like, wrestling with this. They're like, okay, if you put it out as soon as possible, then yes. Like, we'll let you, like, but you have to put it out as soon as possible. And this was, at this point, it was probably November, maybe. I think it was November. And I was like, okay, cool. This is my decision. I had talked with a lot of people about it before. I was like, I'm not going to do the American Idol thing. And then I called the people and was like, hey, you know, basically I put the point on the album. I was like, yeah, you guys won't let me put out this record that I'm finishing up, so I'm going to have to, like, pull out of the contract, you know. And they were cool that they let me, and they weren't like, no, you signed this thing and send it back to us. But they were very insistent. Like, they were like, no, you should definitely still do this. Like, you should come out to LA. This is going to be a good opportunity. It's going to be huge. And but I was like, no, I don't think that's the right thing. So then we started negotiating the other contract with this entity. And there were three of us. And one of the guys was, you know, really wanted, he was sort of like, let's just sign it and just do it. And the guy, one of the other guys probably was most against it. He was more on the side of, like, creative control. And I was in the middle. I was sort of like, and so we're debating, and we got lawyers to help us look at this contract. And it came back at some point where they wouldn't, like, budge. They wanted a 7-album deal.
But that's standard as far as I know. When you're new, they go 7 albums, and you may never have to do
them.
But
it's just like, what are the other pieces of it? It's like, we didn't really have creative control of it. And we had never all been in the same room. We had met separately. So the three of us, they're like, these three guys, they just want to make into this band 7-album deal. We don't own hardly any of it. We don't really get creative control. So me and the dude, the guy that was sort of against it, we basically were like, yeah, this, I just think we don't do this. So after, this was basically February, but we finally got to this point in the contract negotiating. So I graduated from school in December, a semester early. So I finished school. I rushed to finish my record because they said if I could only do it if I released it right away. Finished my record super fast and scheduled to put it out February 4th. And so, like, right before that, the American Idol thing, I didn't even know I was going to be in it necessarily. Like, because I quit. I was just like, I'm out. But they still aired an episode with me. And so it came on TV. So then all my friends are like, hey, you're on American Idol. Oh, my God. You know, they see me get the golden ticket.
Right.
Because I did. And then they're like, all right, are you on next week's episode?
Right.
And legally, at that point, I was not allowed to say anything about the shows or this other situation. The record deal thing, I wasn't supposed to tell anyone because they were affiliated with one of the judges. And so it was like this weird, like, they shouldn't know that we're doing this. So I was like, fucked. I was like, okay, I can't say I turned this down. I can't say about this deal. But I do have this record coming out. And so in that way, it was convenient because I was like, hey, here's this record, which legally I wasn't supposed to do with the idol people, but I got out of the contract. So I sort of had my cake and ate it too. I was like, cool, I put my music out.
So how did the shows decide, like, what did the show say when you weren't ever seen again?
Nothing.
They just pretended, like, whatever.
Well, because I think there's later rounds where they're just like, oh, we cut half the people today or
right,
whatever.
Right.
So yeah, it was anyways, so yeah, basically the week that my record came out, we officially put our foot down on this other contract and we're like, yeah, if you're not gonna give us creative control, like, at least like, let us all get together and, like, try to be a band. Like, you know, get into a room and meet everybody at the same time and try to play. Like, we're not going to do this because it's just, they were just taking all the ownership of it. So this is why this is such a long story.
You never just tell it again, though. This is it.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot more details involved with it. But basically, so yeah, that contract, you know, we turned it down. So it's basically two huge opportunities that I don't say fell through. I mean, in a way they fell through, but we sort of were like, hey, this isn't fair or whatever. And that was how I started my music career, because I finished school. I had a record in my hand. I hadn't done any like release plans or tour plans because I thought I was going to be involved with this thing. So I'm sitting there, record out February 4th after this Idol thing. And I'm like, all right, now it begins. I thought, you know, and I think the biggest lesson from all that, which I'm super thankful for, is that it early on, it put everything in perspective for me. When I was deciding on if I was going to do this record deal and move out to LA and like be that guy, it was like, what's important to you was this, what I had to process. Like, everyone I loved and all my family was over here on the East Coast, Georgia, South Carolina. Everything I'd grown up, all my friends, this thing in LA, like, I wouldn't be able to be creative. I mean, I would, but I wouldn't really be an artist. I would be like a puppet. And anyways, I was processing all this stuff through both of those decisions. And so like coming out of it, I was like, you know what? Now I really understand my goals and like what I want to do. Whereas maybe before that, I probably did have a little bit of a fame and fortune stars in my eyes. Like, when I graduate, I'm going to do this and I'm going to get signed to some label and do this thing. And like having like bumped into some of these people and seen what they're like and seen how they operate and what's their, where their priorities are, I'm like, oh, they're just trying to make money. They're just trying to get more views. They're just trying to do this. And it's gross. And you just, I think it recentered me to be like, okay, I'm going to do things my way. Like, that's the whole point of not, if I'm not going to do these things, I'm doing what I want to do. I'm going to be an artist. I'm going to write songs that I want to write and sing them how I want to sing them. And if I want to put out songs that are different and not branded together, whatever, like all these industry things, like, then I'm going to do that. And
what if somebody said to you, yeah, but if you just did it and took it up the ass for 2 years, then you could have done really whatever you wanted.
I can see that, but I think you give up. I think anytime you give up like artistic integrity, I don't think it's just a thing you can set down and then pick up when it's convenient. Like, I think if you claim to be, you know, an artist and someone that is trying to have artistic integrity and be truthful with your art and putting that out there, I don't think you can set it down when it's convenient and like, you know, get to your platform and then do it. I mean, some people have done that, but I don't think it's like a planned thing. I think it's people naturally evolving and changing. And I think a lot of time, I think for me, if I had been in that scene of people, I would have naturally evolved and changed in a worse way, in a more like, you know, money making industry way. You know what I mean? Because I look at, I mean, who I was back then, I was so dumb and so just figuring out what I believed, what my music was, what was important to say. Like, I was way too young to be figuring out, not too young, way too immature as an artist to figure that stuff out. Just now, I'm finally sort of coming full circle where I'm like figuring out more what I want to say as an artist and like grounding it in important things and not just being flippant and like, oh, let me just do this because it's cool, or you know what I mean? So yeah, I mean, I, you know, it's funny. I did another podcast like a week or two ago, and the guy said something about American Idol, and I just sort of like brush it off. But then later that night, we were hanging out, and he asked me about it, and I sort of told this whole story. And I was like, man, I haven't talked about any of this stuff in so long. I don't think about it. I don't think, there's no like regret. There's no like, oh man, I should have taken that deal. Like, I should have done the Idol thing. Like, I lost so much. It's like, no, man, I don't think about it. And I'm glad. And like, I'm so glad for the path I'm on, because it shapes who you are. It shapes what music you make. Like, it would have been different, and I like what I'm doing. And I met my wife after, you know, it's like, I wouldn't have met my wife if I had done all that stuff. Like, something like that's crazy to me. So yeah, I don't regret it at all, and we'll see where it all ends up. Maybe someday I'll see the guy that was doing that contract, and I'll just be like, hey, remember me? You probably don't, but I went my own path, and look at the cool things I made that are not generic, you know? Because it was some shitty music. It was the songs they wanted us to sing. It was just like, oh my God. Ugh. Yeah.
So where can people find you?
Oh, you know, here and there. My website's sambirchfield.com. B-U-R-C-H. And you can find it everywhere under that. All the tunes. I'm putting out new stuff this fall, which is exciting. So we've been Been in the creative shed, as they say.
Are you on the road a lot?
Yeah, we just, my wife and I were just gone for 3 weeks, basically. And then we go back out next weekend, and we do some stuff in Colorado, late September. And, yeah, pretty much the rest of the fall, we're staying pretty busy.
You you enjoy working with your wife?
Yeah, I do. It's an interesting thing, because, like, both being artists, and for those that don't know, so my wife goes by the artist name Pip the Pansy. And, yeah, you know, it's cool, like...
Formerly known as Ren, which is another complicated legal story.
Yeah, right? We've both had some legal run-ins, man. The thing about her, like, I think she is so naturally a true artist. Like, she just creates very authentically and freely. And she'll just, like, whether it's music or painting or her own visual, like, outfits and stuff she wears, like, it just flows out of her. And that's something I've learned watching her, just like being able to let go of any voices telling you to do something and just sort of be like, nah, this is me, this is my art, and I'm putting it out there. And so it's cool, like, she definitely, bouncing ideas off of each other is really cool and fun. And on this tour, she was backing me up doing some of my music, like a duo, and she's a badass flute player, so it's like this super fun collaboration. But you know, there's challenges too, being two artists and being married, like standard challenges. But yeah, it's pretty awesome. We're definitely really lucky.
Well, thanks for talking to me, dude.
Yeah, sorry I rambled so much about legal.
No, I'm really glad you did, because I understand it now. And like I said, you literally will put this out and then you go, listen, it's a fucking 20-minute story that I don't want to tell, but I'm on this really good podcast, which you should check it anyway, and then you give me some love. And
yeah, you know what I mean? True that, man. Well, yeah, thanks for having me.
So that was Sam. Go check out some of his music. I'll include some links in the show notes. Also some tour dates where you can see him and maybe the wife, Pip, who, thank you so much, Pip. We'll link her old show in the notes as well. You guys are both great guests, and I really appreciated having you. And let's chat soon. Take care, ETL.